Welcome back to the Digital Dive Podcast, a conversation about tech. My name is Darsh. I'm heavily caffeinated. I am also one of your hosts.
My name is Jacqueline. I am your other host. In this week's episode, we're talking about the new MagSafe battery pack, new iPad mini rumors, a new YouTube tip jar, and a lot more.
If you like what you're about to hear in this episode, please make sure to hit the follow button on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and make sure that you get notified for every single episode, and it helps us get this show spread to more people. Really appreciate it. Roll the intro.
MagSafe battery pack. This one was actually sent in to us from a Digital Dive listener. They tweeted it to us on Twitter saying, hey, would you mind featuring this? And then they also submitted it to our Google form, which is like the form for topic submissions. So if you're listening to this now and you have a topic that you want us to talk about next week, you can submit on that Google form. But Darsh, what do you think about the MagSafe battery pack?
Okay, so I've actually been waiting for this for so long. So when Apple unveiled this, when they unveiled iPhone 12 and MagSafe back in October, it immediately was like this like wave of just like excitement to me. Okay, this is the perfect opportunity. They can add a battery pack now. They can make this opportunity. And finally, like after almost a year after the original release of MagSafe, they've now introduced this device. And okay, I'm not going to front about this. I'm not going to lie. It's a lot fatter than I expected. Like it's a thick boy.
Yeah, it is.
It's a pretty thick device. But for everyone who doesn't know what I'm talking about, Apple pretty much came out with a MagSafe base. So a magnetic wireless charger attachment. It's literally like a tiny little power bank. It's of course in Apple fashion, like coated in silicone. It's like soft to the touch. It's white and it has the Apple logo on it. And it pretty much just snaps to the back of your phone, back to the iPhone 12 at least, and 12 Pro, and it'll pretty much just charge your phone based off the battery that it is. So it's a pretty cool concept. I think it's really cool. Ideally, I would have wanted to see this in like a card fashion. Like I was thinking more like a thicker NBT card, for example.
Okay, I got you.
Like I was just thinking like in terms of measurement, like a Dive in NBT tap card, I felt like just like a double or three times the thickness would have been good. This seems like 12 times the thickness, but mistake me if I'm wrong.
No, you're not wrong. I think it's really hard for companies to reduce the battery cell capacity. Like that's an area where we have not seen a lot of innovation, getting the cell super small. We're seeing some innovation in that space, but you're definitely held back by just like how big the lithium ion battery is. So yeah, it's not that thin. It's actually pretty thick. I think it looks relatively clean. I also think that it's pointing to a future where the iPhone becomes portless. Like Apple is definitely investing in this MagSafe future of that's like the way to wirelessly charge your device. I don't know how I feel about it. Like it's definitely cool, but in terms of the speeds that it's able to offer now, people were saying that when they had it on their phone, but they were doing a lot of stuff, the battery was actually like draining. It's just not powerful enough or fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that we're going to be able to get rid of wires anytime soon.
Oh yeah.
We're still ways off, maybe a couple more years. And even then I feel like that would kind of be pushing it, but this is like a step in that direction.
That's the thing. Like Apple for one has always been trying to reduce the amount of ports on the iPhone. I mean, they've been doing it since the start and they're going to continue trying to do it. And MagSafe was definitely the perfect way in for them. But there definitely is a lot of issues with first generation tech like this. So we definitely do have to see how it plays out. I wouldn't be very hard pressed on thinking that the iPhone 13 or 12S or whatever you want to call it is going to have fully wireless charging in the fall. I think it's still going to require a port as its primary form of charging, but I'm very excited about the MagSafe battery pack. Now, this is mostly because of one thing, and it's just convenience. Like, Jack, and I can't tell you the amount of times where I'll be out and I need to charge up my phone and I don't want to carry around my portable charger with a wire attached to it, because then it's like this, like these two thick bricks, like my phone and my charger, and I'm carrying them with this wire and I'm scared I'm going to drop it, or like I have it in two different pockets, or like it's just like rattling around in my bag. I would much rather have something like this that's like secured onto the back of my phone. You can use it when you're out like one time, just like go charge up your phone. It's like a spare battery and then you just toss it back in your bag and charge it when you get back home. In theory, it is a very, very good idea. I have to still try it, but in theory, it is an absolutely insane idea.
Yeah, I agree. Because I think like the fact that it snaps on so easily, and it also, you can easily hand it to one of your friends to use and they can put it on their phone back. And also one of the things I find most annoying with like portable chargers is when you're bringing them with you, there's no easy way to connect it to your phone. So you have to always like hold them separately or like trying to smash them in one pocket, like you said. So the fact that this immediately just connects to your phone and it's only one thing to think about is actually, I think, a really big deal. I also just think that anytime Apple does a technology like this, people just buy it. Like I have countless friends that have like the Apple battery case, which doesn't even look that good, to be honest, but people obviously use their phones a lot. And as people start going out more, I think that this is going to become a big thing. Cause like for the last year and a half, we've been home. Portable chargers for me, at least, have been much less significant in my life, but now we're hopefully getting towards a future where we're going out again. So I don't know. I think that this is like the perfect time for them to launch it.
Oh, absolutely. And actually something cool about it that I didn't mention is the fact that it actually is reverse wireless charging capable. If you do plug in your iPhone, like the Lightning connector into your iPhone, and you have this attached to your phone, you have the MagSafe battery pack attached to your phone, it will charge the MagSafe battery pack and vice versa. But if you end up using the MagSafe battery pack and you're out and you want to charge up your AirPods, for example, it still is just a glorified Qi wireless charging pad that is wireless. You literally can just use it to charge up your AirPods. I think that's actually really, really dope.
It's great.
It's a really good idea. It'd be cool to see though if they could do the same thing or create a way to do it with your Apple Watch, because then literally it's the full spectrum. It's literally every single portable device you carry with you can be charged by this one little power pack. I think that's just genius.
I think it would also be really cool if they could figure out a way to have the Apple Watch charge the iPhone, because sometimes I'll be out and my iPhone will be really low, but my Apple Watch will still have power. And if I was able to place that on the back of my iPhone and then charge it, that would be huge, I think.
I think it would be, but then they'd have to figure out a way to like up the battery capacity in the Apple Watch, because like an Apple Watch's battery capacity is probably like 400 milliamp.
Yeah, it's pretty low.
Whereas like your iPhone's like probably close to 2000. So it would pretty much like drain it for like 10%. It drain your Apple Watch. But I think in theory, like that could be a really, really useful way to do the tech. But that's just a matter of time when we get down the line and batteries can be reduced to this size. I think it could be very, very cool.
You would have to like basically like sacrifice your Apple Watch.
Yeah, literally. It's a sacrifice.
Yeah, it has like, I think it's a 341 milliamp hour battery. So it's pretty small. And maybe that would get you like an extra hour or two on the iPhone, right? Because the iPhone 12, for example, I'm looking it up right now. The iPhone 12 battery size is like 3,700 milliamp hours. So you're getting about like 10% of the battery capacity. Like the Apple Watch only has 10% of the overall iPhone battery capacity. Mm-hmm. So you would basically only be getting 10% extra battery if like the full thing transferred. But I still think that would help you like in an emergency if you needed your phone. It would be like nice to have that.
No, absolutely. Like it's literally just like a sacrifice. It's like one of the, it's like a one-off kind of like, say you have like a flare in your backpack. You just like rip the flare. It's like a one-time thing. Just like I need it in an emergency. Just boom.
Yeah.
Like I think there should be some way to do it. And especially with the technology in an Apple Watch, like it's very possible. They could definitely find a way to reverse it and make it reverse capable. But then again, I guess we'll just wait and see how that turns out over time. But I think it's going to be very, very exciting.
And what about, I mean, there's this other really big rumor about the new iPad mini in terms of connection on that device. They're saying a USB Type-C port, which is kind of a big move for Apple. Obviously, the iPad Pro has USB Type-C, but the iPhone doesn't. So it's kind of interesting to see them put that on the new iPad mini in this rumor from Front Page Tech. In terms of the other stuff, the render that he did, the bezels, it basically looks like an iPad Pro, but smaller, which I'm actually like a huge fan of.
Well, actually, I would say it looks more like an iPad Air. So, you know, last year's iPad Air that just came out.
Yeah, that's true.
It looks just like that. I feel like they're going to be doing the same thing in terms of like how big the bezels are going to be. Actually, maybe not. So here's my thought process, but let me just kind of break it down a little bit for everyone to kind of understand where I'm kind of coming with this. If you look at the iPhone 12 and 12 Pro, for example, this is the first year where the screens actually haven't had any difference in between the two. If you've noticed with the iPhone 11 and 11 Pro, the iPhone 11 screen was an LCD display. The LCD display on the iPhone 11 was very, very different than that of the OLED display that was on the iPhone 11 Pro. So this year with the iPhone 12 is the first year where Apple actually let them both have full capabilities with like the top tier display.
They are slightly different.
They are?
I think brightness is the main area where they're different. And I think also slightly the pixels per inch are different because it's a slightly larger screen.
Okay, yeah, that would make sense. But in terms of just the general screens, they are the same. My thought process would be that maybe they would let the iPad mini have the high-end screen that would be on the iPad Pro, but the iPad Air didn't, which is why I'd be really interested to see if they'd put the iPad Pro screen or the iPad Air screen on it. Because the iPad Air screen is slightly lower resolution than that of the iPad Pro. And I feel like that is also just there to help make a more of differentiation factor between the two of them. The iPad Air is literally the lower iteration of the iPad Pro. The iPad Pro is supposed to be the top of the line, top of the top. So I feel like that's one of the ways they did it.
Yeah. And also like the other way is like performance and speakers and stuff like that. But I actually know a lot of people that use the iPad mini and love the iPad mini. I think a lot of people think that that use case is like no longer because phones are getting bigger, but like the inches on paper is not what it actually is like in person, because there's also like the width. Even though we have 6-inch phones now, if like an iPad mini, let's say, has a 6-inch display, it's much wider and the aspect ratio is very different. So I actually think that there still is room for the iPad mini in the market. And I'm happy to see that Apple's aligned with that. And I think right now the speculation is that it will have the A15 chip and like that 5-nanometer processor, same as the A14. Obviously, also you're going to get maybe the magnetic smart connector as well. Mm-hmm. And that would make sense because then it could work with things like the Apple Pencil. But Darj, I want to throw this to you. Do you know anyone that uses an iPad mini in their real life? And if yes, what do they use it for?
So that's actually the thing. I don't know anyone who uses the iPad mini in a day-to-day. I know more people who use the normal iPad. never the iPad mini, but that also might just be because the iPad mini, it's $100 more expensive than the normal iPad. And the normal iPad, then you get a bigger screen. You still get a pencil support, may not be the newest pencil, but at this current point, the iPad mini does not use Apple Pencil 2. So you're literally getting a better package in the normal iPad than you are for the current iPad mini, in my opinion, at least. Though the processors might be slightly different for what you need the iPad for, the normal iPad is very capable. In that respect, I kind of see where it goes with this, but now looking at the iPad mini, I could see this as becoming a go-to option for a lot of people. Like, I wouldn't mind keeping an iPad mini on me and then getting an iPhone mini.
Oh, interesting.
Because I don't like using my phone anyway for most things. I use my laptop or my iPad for almost everything that's not social media related. When it comes to like my iPad, I feel like I could definitely serve with a smaller screen if needed. I'm not going to say anything specific because my iPad's sitting right here. I don't want to offend him. The iPad mini definitely seems like it could have a lot of good use cases, especially with this new iteration, because it's a whole new design overhaul.
The people that I personally know that use the iPad mini, the reason why they picked it over the regular iPad is strictly the size. Like, they did not want a huge device. They wanted something mini that was still bigger than their phone. They use it for like reading when they're traveling on the go. It's like nice to have the compact device. And if they changed the bezels, then you're still going to be getting the same form factor, but with a much larger display, which I think is huge. And I honestly like could see keeping an iPad mini around the office and just having that, like, to write down a quick shot list or to have kind of like the team use it as like a communal device. Or in smart homes, I think a lot of people use the iPad mini to like control their lights, their air conditioning, etc., and they like mount it to the wall or something. So the use case for the iPad mini is very different than the iPad. I don't think that like price will be the thing that maybe sells the iPad mini when it comes out. The people that buy the iPad mini like are kind of this bizarre niche of people that really want like a compact, portable, small device that's still bigger than their phone. So we'll see how much of the market they can, what percentage of sales this makes up. Like, I bet that you're right that the iPad Pro and iPad Air will still sell a lot better, but I could see it definitely outpacing the regular iPad.
100%. I think at this point, like, the normal iPad kind of just gets kind of run over a little bit. Like, why would you compromise for still like an outdated design? Like, why would you want an outdated design, outdated pencil, when you can buy the latest of the latest with the better processor, the better screen quality, the better speakers, everything for an extra like $100 or so? You're setting yourself up for longer. I don't know. It's definitely something to take into effect. But Jacqueline, I actually wanted your opinion on this. Like, do you think they're going to make, you know, the super expensive iPad keyboard, the really nice one with the really cool hinge?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So the Magic Keyboard that they came out with for the iPad Pro 2020, it's a super, super nice keyboard for everyone listening. It is literally like a chiclet style, almost like a Mac keyboard straight up with a tiny little trackpad, as well as a hinge that effectively makes the iPad float above the keyboard. It's really durable and it has a USB-C pass-through. Do you think they would make something like that for the iPad mini? Why would they put the smart connectors on the back? Because that's what the rumors are saying.
Yeah, interesting. I don't think that they'll do a mini Magic Keyboard because it just like ergonomically would be a disaster, I think. But I think they're putting the smart connectors on the back because I think that they're going to keep building up the ecosystem of products that work with iPads. So maybe it won't be a Magic Keyboard, but maybe it will be a smart case that allows for wireless charging. Like, I think that there's potential there. I don't know though. I don't think that we're going to see a keyboard. I could definitely be wrong, but just like, I know how small the iPad mini is. Like, I have one and I can't even imagine what a keyboard would actually work like at that size.
I remember my brother actually picked up the first generation iPad mini. He got like a Logitech keyboard with it. And that keyboard was so cramped. It was so bad. I just like, I don't know. My sister used it for like, she used the iPad for like half a year at school because like her laptop wasn't working or so. I forget the full reason why she wasn't using her laptop, but she was using this iPad instead. And I just remember it was like the funniest thing. So just like this dinky little keyboard and the keys are literally half the size of what you'd normally expect. I don't know. I guess in small packages, you can't expect a lot of power, but I guess just not good keyboards. That'll be something to take in a note.
That's actually really interesting. I feel like we're going to keep seeing Apple try to build ecosystems outside of just the product, because if you buy a bunch of accessories to use with like a phone or a tablet, it makes it harder to want to switch because you have so much money invested beyond just the actual tech. So we may see that. And we're going to ask you guys, the listeners of this podcast, to invest in us right now by giving us a rating on Apple Podcasts. So we set a goal of 150 ratings on Apple Podcasts before the end of the year. If we hit this goal, we're going to do a live chat with Digital Dive listeners to answer questions and celebrate. So you can help us hit this goal by rating us right now, or we take a quick break to get some cold brew. And then when we come back, we're going to talk about a solar powered car and a new feature that YouTube just added to maybe spice up the creator economy a little bit. And then we'll round off the episode with some stuff that we've liked this week. Darsh, you're like the designated car guy on the podcast.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's kind of a low bar because I know absolutely nothing about cars, but you're up there. I just recently saw in the news, and I was sharing with you this article about a company called Lightyear, which is trying to revolutionize the EV space with a solar-powered car. They just found a manufacturer to help them produce it. What do you think about the car? And I think maybe even taking a step back from that, let's just tell people what the car is and what the value prop is.
Absolutely. Okay, so many of you guys may not have actually heard of this company. Honestly, I didn't either. I actually only found this out because Jacqueline did send it to me. So it's very interesting finding out about this startup. So pretty much effectively in 2016, Lightyear was founded by a team of engineers who had pretty much competed in a world solar challenge. And they held a race every few years in the Australian outback to kind of help advance the idea of solar-powered cars. What ended up actually happening was them founding a startup and showing off their first prototype of what they're calling the Lightyear One. The Lightyear One is a sedan that's going to be solar-powered, of course, an electric vehicle, but also with having solar capabilities, will be offering it extra abilities that you don't necessarily see in the car market today in terms of electric vehicles. One of the things that they tend to promise, 725 kilometers of range, or 450 miles for everyone who uses the mile system. I don't know who does, but weirdos.
Literally everyone in the United States ever.
And also be able to be extremely efficient while being able to generate about 12 kilometers or 7.5 miles per hour with the solar cells embedded in the roof, effectively making it a lot more possible for the owners to go longer distances and longer stretches of time without actually having to plug in the car itself, while all coming within a price range that is still below the Porsche Taycan, Audi e-tron GT, and around the Tesla Model S Plaid is $165,000. The thing that came in the news this week that kind of stood out and caught a lot of people's eyes and definitely caught mine was the fact that they're partnering with a manufacturer called Valmet Automotive. The reason why this is kind of huge is because though these guys are a startup and they actually haven't like created a proper production car yet, they've brought a prototype through, but they haven't actually made the car. They've partnered with a very well-established company. So Valmet Automotive actually in the past has worked alongside a variety of different automotive companies such as Mercedes-Benz, Saab, even Porsche. It would be really interesting to see how Lightyear One goes about working with Valmet to produce this car. And by no means is this car ugly. Like, I'm looking at these like prototype pictures and the renders, like this car looks so sleek.
It looks amazing.
Imagine an Audi had a baby with a Porsche. Then imagine the tech of a Tesla. And then boom, you have this beautiful Lightyear. And not even to mention the name Lightyear, I kind of really, really like it.
I dig it. Yeah.
It's a nice name, like for a car too. Like, I'm going in a Lightyear. Like, what do you mean you're going in a Lightyear? You're going in like light years away. No, I'm driving in my super like futuristic electric car. Like, that's awesome. Like, I don't.
And it looks really like, I feel like solar tech can look terrible, even though like I'm fully for solar tech. Like, it doesn't always look like sexy or like cool. This car like just screams elegance. I feel like I love the design aesthetic also of like the front of the car. It reminds me a lot of like a sports car. In terms of pricing and stuff, like if you reserved one right now, they're only doing a reserve round of 946 people, and you're called a pioneer. That's kind of cool too. It's like very exclusive, and then it's 150,000 euros, which means that if we can't get it because they're only shipping to the EU, Norway, and Switzerland. So I don't know how much coverage we're going to see of it, if like any tech YouTubers will be able to get their hands on it, but I don't know. It's interesting. What do you think? Darsh and I don't know a ton about solar versus like regular electric, but what do you think about this? Like, do you think that it's more of a sustainable energy source than like a Tesla, or do you think it's not really scalable?
Well, here's the thing. Like, I don't know if it's meant to be scalable. With something like this, I wouldn't imagine the company is thinking, okay, like this car is going to fully charge off of solar. But I think what the more purpose of it was to be able to provide like longer durations and longer distances being able to be traveled. Because whether or not we admit it, like everyone who drives an electric car has range anxiety. Like, no matter who you are, it doesn't matter. Literally doesn't matter who you are, you will have range anxiety, especially for the first bit, because it's not as easy to go find a charging station as it would be to go fill up a gas tank. Maybe in different parts of the US it is, but around the world, still that infrastructure is not there yet. So when it comes to like buying an electric car, it's really iffy because people don't know what they can expect when it comes to charging. So this is a really cool concept and idea because you're effectively saying that you'll be able to generate power on your own while you're on the road. So say, for example, you got stranded somewhere or you were driving and it's on a low, you have a like little range, you could literally probably pull aside, see if you can like put your car towards the sunlight and see how much power you can generate to get yourself to that next point. I feel like it's more so not meant to build power, but to really help extend the range and kind of help lower and reduce range anxiety. Like, yo, 725 kilometers. I mean, okay, I might be a little biased. I drive a minivan from 2007. So the range on there isn't the greatest. I'm getting more like 400 kilometers my driving. So 725 seems to me very, very, very intriguing.
Yeah, it seems like you can charge 70 kilometers kilometers per day via the solar panels. Mm-hmm. And obviously, like, that's just like passive. Like, you're not plugging in the car or anything. It just happens, which is actually really cool. Like, 70 kilometers, I don't know how much that is. 70 kilometers is, all right, it's 43 miles. So that's actually not a ton, but that's 43 miles that you're just adding to your range without having to actually do anything, which is pretty cool. And then I think the other main advantage of it is just that solar technology, I think, will get more efficient over time, probably. Mm-hmm. So this is like a great starting point as well.
Yeah, literally. Like, they say like that it's going to be able to generate about 12 kilometers or 7.5 miles per hour with just the solar cells that are embedded in the roof. So I'm thinking like this literally could be one of those things that really does help lower range anxiety. Because say you did ever get stopped at the side of the road and like you need to make it like 5 kilometers or like 5 miles to get into like the closest town or something to recharge, you have that option. You'll be able to do it. Like, you'll have like that ability to pull up to the side, let your car recharge a little bit based off the solar panels, and then get on the road again. And I think that's actually really, really cool. I would love to see more cars, like electric cars especially, like having that opportunity. Like, okay, I saw a TikTok, given it was a TikTok by a guy who tried doing something kind of questionable. He charged his Tesla using a gas-powered generator.
Oh, no.
Okay, it's not like questionable. It's like, I just think it's stupid. I just think, for the lack of better words, that's just stupid. If you're going to buy an electric car, why are you going to try to power it up with gas? Unless you literally bought Tesla for the clout, which, I mean, I fully understand that too. I feel like having those kind of like, having some kind of backup power that you can keep on hand with you to recharge your like electric car, I think would be something really cool. Like, yo, companies, hit me up. I got great ideas. Like, Tesla, make a generator that is electric or solar based that you can put in your car and take with you for long road trips so that you can charge up your car. Because this idea of putting a solar panel on a roof and having it generate electricity itself is genius. I think it'll be cool. I would love to hear everyone's take on it. If you guys ever do want to tweet us at Digital Dive Pod, you know, shoot us your thoughts on solar paneled cars. It's very, very interesting. And it's definitely a new addition to this industry, as far as I'm concerned. But talking about new industries and new things that are added to industries, something that's really cool that we get to talk about right now is YouTube. And one of the things that they added for their creator industry and the creator economy, which is actually the ability to tip on YouTube. Now, Jacqueline, I feel like you know a lot more about this than I do. You want to elaborate a little bit on this?
Yeah. So YouTube has been experimenting with a bunch of different ways to get creators more money. So like when you're doing a live stream, super chat features where people can pay money and then their comment gets highlighted. And it's like people actually seem to be using it, because I've only done like 2 or 3 live streams in the past maybe 2 years. And every single time I've done it, I think there's been donations anywhere from like $50 to like $500 a stream will make. So I can imagine for like much bigger creators, you could be getting tens of thousands of dollars every time you stream. And that's literally just your audience like deciding like, hey, I want to support you in this way. And I'm sure that also if you do it with the intention of like, support me, then it would be even more, because all those things were passive. And also there's this other feature on YouTube where you can join like channel memberships, and then for $5 a month or certain amount, you can get perks that the creator includes. So a lot of creators will have certain videos that are just for channel members. It's kind of like Patreon, but right on the platform. But I think one of the reasons why a lot of creators try to do a Patreon or something is because they want to diversify their income. They don't want everything relying on YouTube. So those two features, while are cool, like, they can't be the only things that you do in addition to AdSense, because I think a lot of creators like are stunned by how insignificant AdSense is depending on your niche and your viewership. And then for other creators like Graham Stephan, it's millions of dollars a year. So kind of really can depend, but I think that YouTube is trying to just offer abilities to expand beyond that. So this new feature is basically called Super Things, lets you tip creators. And the feature lets users applaud a creator by choosing between like 4 different price points. So anywhere from like $2 or $50. And then when a user purchases that, they'll get like this little animation on their screen. And then they'll also, the creator will have the ability to respond to that. That's actually a pretty cool feature. The animation is really cool as well. And it's anywhere from like $2, $5, $10, or $50. And I think that a lot of people are actually going to use it. When you do it, a comment in the comment section gets created, and it's like, shows the amount that you've tipped, and then they can write a comment. So I think that people are going to start doing this so they can get like top comment or something like that. And so they can get noticed by the creator. Like, if I loved a creator, I definitely would donate like $15 or $10 to get them to see my comment if I wanted them to. So I think that viewers that genuinely love the creator will do it. I also think that people are going to view it from like a business standpoint and think that they're going to be get more likely to get a response or pitch something if they do this. It's almost like a paid ad in a weird way. So I guess we'll have to see how it's used. Like, I would hate to see people using it to then promote their own channels or something that is unrelated to the video. But yeah, I don't know. It's a cool feature. And also the payments all within YouTube, like, so you don't have to leave the app versus like other Patreon where you'd have to leave the app and come back. So I'm excited about anything creator economy. I don't know if it will be the thing, like, it's definitely not going to be the thing that makes someone be able to go full time for most people, but we're seeing OnlyFans and other platforms come up with the audience directly paying creators. And I just think we're going to see a lot more of that.
Oh, absolutely. I think actually one thing that's really cool about this is that it really is YouTube trying to take on Twitch in a very, very blatant and honest way. Like, it's like, this is what Twitch does. Twitch literally has the opportunity to have members either subscribe or send tips or send money to their favorite creators during live streams. And I feel like companies and social media platforms are really understanding the value behind live streaming. Like, TikTok has been doing it forever. Like, if you have over 1,000 followers, you can start live streaming and then your audience can start to like send you tips. I think that was kind of a cool feature that they took from Twitch and kind of reinvented for themselves. Twitch has been using that forever, and now YouTube also has this feature available. So I think it's really interesting to see how all these different platforms are working, not together, but they're working towards the same goal. And I feel like that goal is more so something along the lines of like generalized media. Like, they want to be like this one, they want to set this up as like the new mainstream. Like, I know on Twitch, for example, you can watch like a 24-hour stream of a DJ playing music. This like DJ will go for 24 hours in a row and will just be going and playing whatever he plans on playing or she plans on playing. And you can just drop in whenever, kind of like a TV channel, like, or on a TV network, like when you'd go on cable, like that, you know, that box in your parents' kitchen or like in the family living room, when you turn it on, there's like channels that you can pick and like there's everything's in a select timing and it's crazy.
The difference is that you can do this anytime. So like, you can watch the video like 5 days from when it's posted and still give a tip, which I think it makes it better than like the live stream tipping that YouTube has, because it gives you the ability to make revenue after the fact. So like, live stream is very much like an active form of income because you're live streaming and then you get tipped, versus this is more passive because it's like you put in the 30 hours making the video and like 5 years from now you can still be getting like reaping the benefits from it. So I think that's really cool. I also think that we're going to see a lot of platforms, like you're saying, Darsh, kind of like almost compete with each other. Mm-hmm. Because there's so much competition to get creators like on your platform. We're going to keep seeing these incentives. Like, Snapchat had the $1 million a day thing. Now Facebook is investing tons of money. TikTok has a creator fund. YouTube is investing a lot in shorts. I think we're just going to keep seeing it.
This is a very fair point. Like, we are going to keep seeing this over time. And in the creator space, especially, like, I think the more that these companies do work towards helping the creators grow, help the creators create like an actual income from this and like really valuing the work that they do, I think that's just genuinely adding so much more validity and honestly just overall support. Like, YouTube doing this is just them showing their support for creators. I feel like after a very rough couple of years with YouTube and their relationship with creators, I feel like they've iced out a lot of creators. Maybe that's just me because I'm a little salty still.
What are you salty about?
Basically, they made it a lot harder to be part of the partner program. It used to be a lot easier to be part of it.
Oh yeah, like the 4,000 watch time hours and stuff like that.
4,000 watch time hours is absurd.
Wait, dude, is it? How much would that break down to? Like, if you had like, if every video you make is 10 minutes.
4,000 hours of watch time?
It's like 400 people watching a 10 minute video.
Wait, no. 4,000 hours.
What did I do? I did minutes?
You did minutes. Yeah, it's 4,000 hours.
Okay, 4,000 hours. Wait, so times 60. So that's like 240,000 minutes. So if you had a 10-minute video, you would need 24,000 people to watch that all the way through.
All the way through.
So if everyone only watched 50%, you really need like 48,000 people. That doesn't seem that much to me, actually, because if you had a video hit 48,000 views, you're probably only going to make $48 from that, maybe. Like, maybe a little more, but not that much. So I don't necessarily have a problem with that. I think that that's a good benchmark. But what I have more of a problem with is the fact that they're running ads on people's channels, even if they're not monetized.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like, it's kind of like, maybe like, so for me, I'm not super consistent, right? So you need 4,000 hours of watch time in the past 365 days. So if you have videos that you're trying to make and they're not blowing up and you're still putting in all that work, and you don't fully get it. Like, I don't know. I'm a little salty just because I was on the program and they kicked me off because of this thing.
How did they kick you off? Like, do you just get an email like, hey, you're out?
Yeah, they sent me an email. They're like, we regret to inform you. Like, you no longer can be part of the program.
Oh my God.
And I was like, okay, like, that's a little kind of a slap in the face. And even with this, actually, with this new feature, like this YouTube tipping feature, you have to be part of the partnership program to get it. So I have a little salt towards YouTube, but ultimately, I think YouTube is still a really good platform. And if I was more consistent, I definitely feel like I could have hit that benchmark, but I'm not consistent. So that is on me. I will not front on that. And that is something I don't like this week. It's my inconsistency on YouTube. But something I do like this week, because I'm just going to transition right into the stuff we like this week before we run out of time.
Perfect. Let's do it.
I wanted to say a huge thing that I like this week was LG. Now, this is mostly just because they had like an event and they just sent out like lunch for everyone who attended the event. And I just thought that was really nice.
What'd they send you guys?
So I got 12-hour smoked barbecued brisket burrito.
Holy crap. That's like a legit meal.
No, it was like a four-course. I couldn't finish all the food. I got a Thai salad. They gave me a burrito, which was the 12-hour smoked barbecue brisket burrito. They gave me a brownie, which was amazing. They sent me a cookie like when I got the V60 to review, and so not V60, the LG Velvet.
Where are they getting the food from? Are they sending it to you from a place in Toronto?
Cookie, yes, was from a bakery. This food was all sponsored or like provided by MLSE, which is like the Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment Company. They own the Toronto Maple Leafs and Toronto Raptors, like both those sports teams.
Wow.
And so they also had a bunch of like Raptors. It was just really, really nice of them. I was just going because it was a, the event was called Level Up Your Side Hustle. It was about like working on being a creator and like how to be more efficient as a creator. And like they had like a panel. So I was like, this is a really cool opportunity. I'm going to go sit in. And then I get a box yesterday and it has all the food inside of it, as well as like fresh guac and all this. I'm like, this is so nice. So LG, you're something I really do like this week. I love you guys. Thank you. LG Canada.
That's a good one. Something I like this week is actually an analytic that YouTube added to Creator Studio. You can basically see how many subscribers your channel had at any given day. It's really easy to get caught up in the day-to-day numbers and get caught up in comparing yourself to other channels or comparing yourself to a really good month that you've had. And it's also really easy to forget like what it was like in the beginning, like how much you grinded for something or how hard you worked or how long it took. So for example, I did YouTube for like a month. Wait, let me pull up the exact analytic because it blew my mind. By the time I was doing YouTube for like almost 2 months, I only had 67 subscribers.
Wow.
Which is like crazy, because like now maybe every few days I'll gain something around there, which is not like a flex or anything. Just like, it's just a huge difference. And I think that sometimes it's easy to forget like the days where you're literally counting every single subscriber on a daily basis. For a lot of creators listening to this, you may be getting in your head about not growing fast enough or people growing faster than you. And I would just like to say, like, just keep putting in the work, because you never know when something is going to like take off or what video is going to hit.
Oh, absolutely. Also, like another thing with that is like, don't worry about subscribers. Worry about views, watch time.
Yeah.
Really, really good metrics to tell you how to improve so you can get those subscribers. The subscribers are just people saying like, I want to come back for more, but those views are where you can find out what the people like. You can look at those analytics and find all the juices that make them tick. I don't know where I was going with that, but let me check out those analytics too.
Yeah, I think for creators, the most important analytics to check are click-through ratio on a video and watch time, because click-through ratio shows you, have you made an interesting promise? Like a promise that someone, you've titled your video and you thumbnailed your video in a way that someone wants to click on it, and then watch time shows if you've delivered on that promise. So if you have a really high click-through ratio, but then a really low watch time, it means like you clickbaited people. But if you have like both are really good, you're in good shape. But I do think the subscribers are also an important metric, because it helps you get the notification out to at least some people in the beginning. You know, at least some people are going to see the video. But then also, if you're just constantly getting a lot of views and not converting any subscribers, probably a pretty good sign that maybe the content isn't there yet.
That is very, very true. So another thing I like this week, it's not something that's happened yet, but it's something that I found out about. So when the Bucks won last night, huge congratulations to the Milwaukee Bucks winning the NBA Finals for 2021. I believe it's 2020 or 2021, something like that, because I know we missed last year's, I'm pretty sure. Huge congratulations to them for winning the NBA Finals. But Kanye West, of all people, decided to finally announce that he will be dropping an album. Now, when I say finally, I mean like he said he's going to drop this album like 6 times in the past like 2 years.
Wow.
So he has finally given us an actual date on Friday, this July 23rd, that we're going to get it. And he released a song from the album, meaning that it's actually kind of done. So yes, please. Thank you. I want to listen to it. If it's been in the making for so long, it better be good. That's all I'm saying. But it's a good piece of news this week that I'm very, very happy to have heard.
Okay, wait. As we're on this thing right now, I just saw an ad from OnePlus come up about a new OnePlus Nord called the OnePlus Nord 2. Okay, we're definitely going to have to look into this. It's launching. I guess it launched today. All right, dude, we're going to have to look into that right after the podcast, and we'll touch base on that again next week. Another thing for me this week, Gossip Girl. Darsh, have you heard of Gossip Girl before?
Yes, I've heard of Gossip Girl.
Okay, cool. It was a show in like the early 2000s. It just came back for a reboot. It is like, I'm mixed on it. The premise of the show, spoilers ahead, is that the teachers are now Gossip Girl. So like they're stalking these underage kids, which just feels wrong.
That's so weird. Oh!
I don't know, like, who thought that that was, like, the proper premise, but, like, when the first scene, they're taking, like, explicit pictures of, like, the kids, like, the first episode. So I just feel wrong about that. But on the plus side, it has, like, beautiful cinematics of New York City, and it has, like, New York City in the rain a lot, which is, like, my favorite. So I'm a fan of it for that. I'm not that much of a fan of the plot, though.
Jesus. Oh, my goodness. Oh, that's disgusting. Oh, my. Who did the reboot?
Oh, I think it's HBO Max. Actually, but I think that a lot of the writers are back from the original, and like the person that does the voiceover, Kristen Bell, is also back.
Oh,
so like people were freaking out about that.
I knew that she was the Gossip Girl voiceover, so that's actually really interesting that she's back. But I definitely won't check it out. But I'm excited to see how the ratings go for it. If it gets renewed,
I think it did pretty bad. Pretty sure like it just got pummeled in like initial ratings.
Would not be surprised.
You know, the outfits are good, the cinematics are really good, but yeah, the plot, not that great. But let me throw it back to you for your last one this week.
My last one this week was actually a video that I watched by Marquez. It was like how YouTubers make money.
Yeah.
I thought it was like a really, really clean and easy summation of how a lot of creators make money without like, it was very informative, but it was also just kind of entertaining.
Yes.
I felt like I was really a part of the conversation because he literally anticipates so many of the questions that you're going to have. Huge shout out to Marquez. You did great with the video. I thought it was really, really good. Guys, go check it out.
The intro of that video where the person asks him what he does for a living, and then he's like, all right, I guess we're going to do it.
Choose A, B, or C.
I literally related to that on like such a fundamental level, because every single time I have like any social interaction, when people ask me like what I do or what I'm interested in, I'm like, oh God, like should I tell them about the YouTube channel or should I just be like photography or whatever? Every single time, because you just know that there's a plethora of questions coming next. So yeah, I thought that he nailed that too. I think we should wrap it up so we don't go over time. So I want to thank everyone so much for listening to this episode. Quick reminder, if you're at this point in the episode, I'm assuming you enjoyed it. Like, why would you listen to something you hate for 30 minutes? So if you did enjoy this episode, please follow us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and make sure that you see the next episode. And it also helps us with the algorithm, like the podcast algorithm. Thank you so much to Luke for editing this episode, Adil Constantine for the intro and outro music, and for you for listening. We'll be back next week, 7 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. Eastern, every single Monday.
Thank you guys so, so, so much for listening. And remember, if you guys did like what you guys heard, please make sure to drop a 5-star rating or even just a 3-star rating. Just let us know what we're doing wrong. Tell us what we're doing right. I don't know. Up to you. Thank you guys so much for listening. Drop that review, drop that follow, and we'll see you guys 7 a.m. Central, 8 a.m. Eastern. Peace.